Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Fam.
And now, Chuck and Winkler, two townies talking Wisconsin sports, covering nothing but your favorite teams. Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, this is Chuck and Winkler on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
We're spinning feet here. We cannot undo these things we've done. You're outlaw peace. You're outlaw peace.
Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries.
Now you're talking, player.
Pete Doherty, PackersNews.com, Green Bay Press Gazette. The outlaw of the show joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Outlaw Pete, thanks again for stopping by. How are you?
Hey, Pete.
That will always make me laugh.
If we don't
there
do it,
there's no getting around that.
If Bart and I can't do it, at least our music certainly can. Hey, you've been through the years you've covered the Packers. You've seen the new coaches come in and come out, and cultures change and all that. I heard Aaron Jones the other day talking about the culture has certainly changed here in the locker room. But you've seen that happen before, haven't you?
For better and for worse.
Yeah.
When Ray Rhodes came in, there was this huge sense of relief. You could tell from players and people on staff, because Holmgren was just so intense. And when they lost two games in a row, man, that place turned into a morgue. I mean, everybody was walking on eggshells. It was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And when Rhodes came in, it was a looser atmosphere. But, and everybody was relieved and loved it, but it turned out he was running too much of a country club, and so it ended up being for the worse. And then when Sherman came in, it tightened down again and things were better organized. Then McCarthy, there was a little more accountability for the quarterback. This one, it's looser in ways, but it obviously hasn't hurt them that way, and it's looser in the sense that the players – at least to me, he doesn't just not mind them showing, that they're having fun. I think he actually encourages that on the field. It sure seems like it anyway.
That's funny because Holmgren, the transition between Holmgren and Ray Rhodes. Holmgren came across as your uncle at these press conferences, the nice guy doing the TV commercials. It was Rhodes who was like the stone face up there, and, there was no messing around. He came across as the hard ass, but it was the other way around, it seems.
It was that's exactly how it was.
Yeah.
They were the exact opposite of those public personas. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. It was that's exactly how it was in Holmgren. And he could be intimidating. I don't remember Favre saying there'd be some times, especially early in his time as a starter, when, if they had lost or he'd played a bad game, he'd walk past Holmgren in the hallway and it'd be just those two and Holmgren wouldn't even look at him.
Jeez.
It's happened to me before here in this building, too, with my bosses. Yeah.
That's post-game Chuck and Winkler most every day.
That's nothing new.
Yeah, outside the studio, I don't even recognize this guy.
Oh,
Pete Doherty, PackersNews.com, Green Bay Press Gazette, joining us, Chuck and Winkler on The Fan. You look at the stat of new coaches coaching in this league this year. Outside of Matt LaFleur, they're 4-19-1. Everybody's pretty bad. Matt LaFleur is a first-year head coach, 4-1. And I think the rebound that they had was very telling, that they did lose a game to the Eagles. You could have won that game. It was at home. They go to Dallas then, dominate that performance for the most part. Defense obviously broke a little more than Ben did in the second half. Was there, as we're talking about culture change and stuff, how did you see Matt LaFleur respond to the loss? Did everything seem the same? Because we always say winning masks all the problems. But after a loss, I think the Packers did a good job of refocusing, going through that adversity, and making sure they went down to Dallas and got the win.
Yeah, if you look at all the teams that got new coaches, most of them were bad and most of them are hurting that quarterback. So LaFleur walked into a good situation because at least he had a quarterback. Now, the quarterback hadn't played so well, and one of the reasons he got hired was they needed somebody to get him playing well again. So it's not a gimme that he comes in and does well. You know, we saw other coaches come in. You know, Rhodes came in and went 500. I think Sherman went 8-8 or 9-7 in his first year. McCarthy 8-8 with Favre. So it's not a gimme, but he did have that advantage, and he's taken full advantage of it and all those signings they had on defense. But you're right. They did rebound really well. And, you know, Dallas probably isn't as good as everybody thought because those first three games were against bad teams. But it's still, they still have a lot of talent. And to go down there and play such a good game and play as well as the Packers did, yeah, I think it speaks really well to what, you know, LaFleur's doing. And it probably suggests that, the players like him and listen to him.
Yeah, this is not taking any away from LaFleur, and you know he's still 4-1. But if you have talent on your roster and you're at least somewhat of a competent coach, you're going to get the job done. And I feel like some of these guys on defense, they've given him the ingredients on offense and defense, and now he's just got to do the right things with him, and he is. But they've given him some talent too.
Yeah, it's still players more than anything. Unless you have just the exceptional coach, you know, the once-a-generation coach, something like that. Otherwise, yeah, it's still players are the most important thing. Now, you know, things fell apart in Dallas when Barry Switzer took over, so that's, you know, it took a couple of years, but things went downhill there. So the coach does matter, but, yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, I mean, it's early. We're only a third of the way through the season, but, I mean, right now Gutekunst has to be just way ahead of the pack for being executive of the year, because he signed three free agents. It's pretty rare on defense. It's pretty rare to hit on all three of them, because you can very easily go over three on those, you know. And it looks like he was pretty much right on the nose on all three of those guys, the Smiths and Adrian Amos.
The other big free agent, Pete Doherty, PackersNews.com, was Billy Turner. He's had times where he struggled. I think Elgton Jenkins has been the big addition, as we can all agree, onto the offensive line with the draft pick. Lucas Patrick fills in, raves about Rodgers this week. Can this Packers team win with a banged-up offensive line? Is this offensive line good enough to keep doing what they're doing in your eyes, Pete?
As is, yeah. I think they might be, you know, if Bakhtiari gets hurt, or Bulaga, who's playing really well, that could change things, especially Bakhtiari because the left tackle, but really both tackles, there's good outside rushers on both sides, you know, in this league. So I think that'd be, because I just don't think they're strong at backup tackle. So that would change things. But with the one injury on the inside, I think they're still fine. That's my take anyway.
How good can Jair Alexander be? Yeah, I know he had a rough game against Cooper last Sunday, but how good can he be?
He did. I was talking with a scout last week, and I was just texting back and forth with him. I said, you know, I'm starting to think Alexander might be a top five corner in the league. And he shot back, he's definitely a top five corner in the league. Now, he did have that. He did have a rough game. But, look, unless, you know, the Deion Sanders kind of corners, you know, they are extremely rare where you can actually really shut down a real true shutdown corner. It almost never happens in this league. So these guys, even the really good ones, get beat. But Alexander's really talented. He plays hard. He tackles. He's highly, highly competitive. There's just a lot to like there.
I suppose we should ask a question about Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what would a Packer conversation be without him? And Rodgers this week, he says, you know, stats don't matter as much as the winning. Okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, I get it. But then he gets criticized. I don't know how much criticism you've seen come your way about this, but Aaron Rodgers, now people are wondering if that's really true. I think that the Packers have set themselves up in an interesting way where, because you have the example with Philly, where Rodgers has to do everything, and then they lost. But if you've got a good defense, and if you've got a good running game, and we'll see what it's like when the other pieces come back, but if Rodgers has to be like your break in case of guy, I think this is going to be a pretty successful season here, Pete, for Green Bay.
Yeah, the better they run the ball, you know, the less he has to do, then it certainly makes his life easier. And as we saw in Dallas and Philly, I mean, he can still do it. You know, and I realize in the Philly game they didn't run the ball well, but Philly's really good, I think, and they've got a really good run defense. And it wasn't like the Packers were having any trouble moving the ball up and down the field and putting up points, throwing the ball. So even though they didn't have balance, I didn't look at that game as a problem. And then in Dallas, they ran the ball so well. I mean, Aaron Jones was unbelievable in that. But, yeah, I think, you know, with the way I thought Rodgers, I know his passer rating was, what, like 85, which is, you know, that's kind of bad, actually, in today's NFL. But I thought he had an excellent, excellent game on Sunday. And if he's playing like that, not making mistakes and still making plays, they're going to be really tough to beat. I don't know if he can do that week in, week out, but if he can, I mean, when he plays like that, they are really hard to beat.
Is this offensive line maybe a little better than we thought it was going to be?
Yeah, you know, I agreed with you that, you know, like I thought Turner really had some rough spots early on, just, you know, in pass protection. But I, you know, this last game he played really well. You know, I thought they overpaid him, but you know, maybe by the end of the year it's looking like a better signing today than it was a few weeks ago, and maybe by the end of the year, you know, they'll feel like they're getting their money's worth.
We're a couple days away yet from Packers Lions. The NFC North has done something no division's done at this point in the season since 2012, where all the teams have a winning record. Bears have the bye. Vikings host the Eagles this weekend, and then Packers Lions. From what you've seen with Detroit, what do we expect from them? I think that's the big mystery. I think we know Minnesota. We know where their problems are, where they're good. Same with the Bears going through the quarterback injury. Detroit still, Pete, they could still be a team that loses 10 of their next 12, or they could win 10 of their next 12. I don't know how to figure out the Lions at this point.
Yeah, and I agree completely. And I don't know what to make of them. I was texting with a guy who used to coach in this division yesterday and asked him what he thought of them. And he said, I think they're riding a wave of confidence. And when the quarterback doesn't throw interceptions, he's a pretty talented guy. So they're winning, but you know, he didn't sound convinced that they're a really good team. You know how it is in this league. Every year there's a couple teams that end up being, you know, having a record quite a bit better than you would have guessed, and one or two that are quite a bit worse. And so maybe the Lions are just one of those, maybe things are coming together, and maybe Patricia's a really good defensive coach, or maybe they're just off to a decent start and they played a really good game against Kansas City, so everybody thinks they're good, and actually they're not that much better than last year. I have no feel for him other than, you know, with Stafford, he's just got as much arm talent as anybody, but he tends to take too many risks. And if he minimizes those risks, you know, they get a lot tougher to beat.
Pete, we'll continue to follow you for the coverage. PackersNews.com, Green Bay Press Gazette. You do a great job. We will be in touch. Outlaw Pete joining us. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, Pete.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Outlaw Pete Doherty on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019. Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. The NFC North is bunched up, so let's take a look at what Vegas thinks. The Packers currently 11-10 odds to win the division. So that puts them at about 1-1 odds to win the division. They are in first place, and Vegas likes them to most likely win it. Not far behind, though, are the Bears and the Vikings, both 3-1 odds to win the division. The Lions come in at 6-1 odds. Monday's game is going to be huge. I mean, if Detroit wins that, I would think that those odds change a little bit.
Yeah, and the Lions are coming in here with a lot of confidence, I feel. Their defense playing very well. Aaron's going to have some opportunities, I think, against that defense. They rush three guys. So there's going to be, I think, some opportunities for Aaron to have some time back there to throw the football. But, yeah, I'm surprised the line's only 4.5.
The NFC odds, by the way, since we're on odds, Saints are 5-1 odds to win the NFC. Packers and Eagles are second at 7-1. And then the Niners are 8-1.
Where are the Cowboys?
The Cowboys are 10-1.
After drop, yeah.
Rams are 10-1. Bears and Vikings both 12-1, Lions 16-1. And for those of you looking to make a quick $1,000 off a dollar, you could go with the Washington Redskins. 1,000-1 odds to win the NFC.
Just take your money in that case and just dump it in the lake.
How about the Redskins and the Dolphins playing each other this week?
God, should there even? Who's got the broadcast rights for that one?
I think they are just going to play the game and let people come in Facebook Live or Periscope or stream. I don't think the TV cameras will turn on. They've refused to turn on.
Two bad teams. You'll have lower tier broadcasters, probably Tom Brenneman. And then, the game should be in England.
Where is the game?
What's that?
Where is the game this week?
What's that?
I don't know. Washington and because I want to guess the line before I look at it.
I would say, oh, Washington's definitely
all right,
favored.
It's at Miami, though.
But Washington's got to be favored. Miami has looked so terrible.
But Washington's got a new head coach.
Yeah. And you take Washington, when a guy, you know how it is, when you take a, when a team makes a coaching change, usually that team comes out and makes a strong effort, maybe wins the game.
All right, true.
But Dolphins are terrible.
I think the Dolphins, and I'll look it up here, I think the Dolphins would be a three-point favorite.
Yeah.
I think Vegas will just go pick them.
Okay.
And then give the Dolphins a three at home.
I'm going to give Washington minus three.
Drum roll, please. Washington's minus three.
I am. Okay.
Wow.
I'm right again. So
you're in the wrong biz, bud.
Well, you know what? I
be an odds maker.
Well, got something right there.
Or at least run a book.
Hey, I told you yesterday, the two baseball winners, I said, take the two road teams. Take the two road teams. And that's gonna get you a winner. Two road teams won in baseball. Tonight, in that baseball game tonight, who knows?
Oh, I like the Rays.
Against Garrett Cole?
I love the Rays.
Against God, he's a boy. Cole was so good Saturday night. He's a tough guy to bet on. Bet against.
Rays are winning the whole thing, bud.
I think so.
They're winning the ship.
Well, that you know what? If the Rays win tonight, the Yankees will have home field advantage.
Yeah, they'll probably lose.
I think the rest of the postseason, they may have home field advantage.
I want to talk a little more baseball from a Brewers perspective, because if you look at this NLCS, it's like, oh my God, the Brewers had the opportunity. And there's one thing that the Brewers did. I've harped on Stern so much this year, but I've given him a free pass on maybe what was the worst decision he made all season. And it might have cost him a shot at the NLCS, Freems.
Really?
Yes.
How?
I'll explain next.
Kelly's one strike pitch. Swinging a fly ball, center field deep. Bellinger going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's a grand slam. Howie Kendrick has done it. They're going crazy in the Nationals dugout. Howie Kendrick with a grand slam here in the 10th inning of Game 5. The Nationals 7, the Dodgers 3.
We never gave up. You know, the city had faith in us. The fans had faith in us. We believed in ourselves. You know, everybody came through for us. I mean, every guy on this roster and some guys that aren't, you know, they stepped up and did a great job.
Anybody that they bring, you know, out of their bullpen or anybody on their pitching staff, I mean, there's a reason why they won over 100 games. I mean, they're a great ball club. They could hit and then they can pitch as well. And so we just wanted to continue to stay aggressive and try to be confident. We're not going to just sit there and, you know, take it and roll over and die. So, you know, we wanted to continue to fight and like we've been doing all year.
The Washington Nationals 7-4 over the Dodgers yesterday. The Cardinals beat the Braves with a 10-run first inning. So your NLCS is the Washington Nationals and the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman, 414-799-1250. You can find us all over the place, including the radio.com app. You know, between the Nationals winning last night and the football team firing their head coach, man, if I was doing sports radio in Washington, I would be living the dream.
Yeah, I think the number one story there is probably the Redskins firing their coach.
And I'd make sure I slept in every morning instead of serenading as a poser, but I would just be living the dream.
Yeah, well.
Doing Washington sports.
Some guys are. When I did our show from the All Sports Station there, WJFK, the morning guys there, there's like 16 guys in the morning show. And they're all wearing like Vikings. Or they're all wearing Redskins clothing. So they were all into the Redskins. I just sensed that in Washington, even though the Nationals were in the postseason, it was all about the Redskins and their poor start. That's what it was.
Well, I mean, the Nationals. Well, yeah, I mean, the Nationals have given them heartbreak the last few years. I don't think National fans were going to believe it until it actually happened, because they've made the playoffs now. This is the fifth time in the last 7 years, 8 years. First time they've gotten to the NLCS. So they consistently get in, and then it's heartbreak after heartbreak. We might have a thing in common or two. The stat on Clayton Kershaw, he didn't give up those that home run, that grand slam. That was off Joe Kelly.
Yeah.
But Kershaw gave up two home runs in the eighth inning, and this stat's going around, and it's incredible. Clayton Kershaw, his career after the sixth inning, if he's ever in the game after the sixth inning in the regular season, his ERA is 2.33.
Awesome.
That's very good.
Yeah.
In the postseason, it's 12.27. That's the highest all time with a minimum of 10 innings pitched.
Isn't it odd how some great players in all sports that whatever for whatever reason, they get to the big moment and they get to the big game, man, they don't perform. Or teams, they get to the big moment and they might be terrific in the regular season, but man, they just spin their wheels like the Dodgers or Clayton Kershaw or those Buffalo Bills teams in the 90s. I mean, there's just what is the deal where some teams, they just cannot get it done. They go through the regular season, they blow through it, and certain guys just are postseason, they're choke artists. And I think, you know, Clayton laid that one right down the middle on the second home run he gave to tie it up. Second one of Soto, right down Main Street, and he hit it like 450 feet. What's Clayton Kershaw doing? He's better than that.
You hate the word choker.
I do.
Do you think Clayton Kershaw is a choker?
I don't know why he's giving up two home runs in the ninth inning, because he shouldn't be giving up two home runs for a month of games. Choking, I feel when you see a guy out there and you could tell he's trembling, or a team is throwing up air ball free throws or can't get out of its own way. I don't know. I mean, Kershaw, he did pitch well against the Brewers the second time around in the postseason last year. Remember, the Brewers touched him in game one of the NLCS.
Woodruff.
Yes, home run. He later came back in game five and beat the Brewers, the turning point of that series, I felt, and won that game.
There's a popular meme going out there this morning where Clayton Kershaw is wearing clown makeup and looks like the Joker.
Yeah.
Although the title says Choker.
Could be too much, but how do you explain Kershaw not coming up in the big moment then?
Let's talk to Ted in Waukesha, 799-1250. What's up, Ted?
Well, we had two Ralph Branca's within two innings. Mr. Kershaw in the eighth, Mr. Kelly in the tenth. And we had Charlie Dressen. The role of Charlie Dressen was played by Dave Roberts, and the role of Clyde Sutcliffe was played by Rick Honeycutt, and it was an exact parallel.
I thought of too.
The October 3rd, 1951, the shot heard round the world at Coogan's Bluff.
Yep.
And all of us that were Brooklyn Dodger fans that day just absolutely cursed Charlie Dressen for his decision.
I still wake up in the middle of the night going, Dressen!
I'm kind of the Bobby Thompson of this radio station.
You're kind of the Charlie Dressen of this radio station.
Yeah, I'm the Bobby Thompson. Shot heard around the world. Yes, go ahead.
But there it is, and I think that people should take a look at Mr. Kershaw as a choker. I can't believe I wouldn't even want to be listening to talk radio in Los Angeles this morning and all the abuse that Mr. Roberts and Mr. Kershaw might be taking.
Let me tell you something. In Los Angeles, they just move on.
Yeah.
They're not like us. I was out there. There's no passion. They just go to the beach. You know, they just get out their car phones, their cell phones, and just move on to the next thing. They don't show up. You know, the fans aren't passionate there. They left after the Grand Slam last night, which they'd probably do here too. But honestly, I don't sense when I was out there, the crowds aren't loud. Sure, they may have a full house, but there's people walking around. They don't care. Dodger fans, people in Los Angeles, they don't care. I'm telling you, they just moved on. We'd be lamenting that loss for the next 3 weeks. Los Angeles, they're just moving on to the Lakers.
Clayton Kershaw.
That's the hardest part every year. I mean, just when you don't win the last game of the season and you're to blame for it, it's not fun. And the main reason is just the group of guys in this clubhouse. And it's a terrible feeling.
Imagine being the Dodgers.
Imagine being Mary Hart, who was at the game last night.
Oh, yeah, she was always at those games.
She was at the game last night?
She was at the Brewers-Dodgers series. Yeah. I was tired of looking at her.
Yeah.
Imagine being the Dodgers. Like, if this happened to the Brewers. They've won the division every year for the last 7 years. They've won at least 91 games every year for the last 7 years. Could you imagine winning the Central for the last 7 years, winning 90-plus for the last 7 years, going to two World Series and losing, going to two more NLCSs that you lost, 7 years about 700 wins to show for it and nothing else.
Yeah. Sounds like kind of like the Packers without the Super Bowl appearances. You know, all those playoff losses, all those high hopes in the, after the winning it in 2010, thinking there was going to be more and nothing more after that. Yeah, Dodger, I mean, and they had some, I mean, this is all the way back to 88. They've had some good teams after that, just not in the last 7 years. They've had some good teams, some real good teams, but just for whatever reason, couldn't get it done.
I think if you go up to any baseball fan or if you're talking baseball at a bar with someone and you go, hey, off the top of your head, when's the last time the Dodgers won the World Series? I think you might, I mean, you would think about it for a second and say, well, they've been really good lately. Did they win that one in 2017? Did they win that one in 2014? And you, oh, it was the Houston Astros or someone else. When did they win it? They haven't not won since 88, have they? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the last time they won it. And they've been so good for so long.
And you look at the, even like, if you want to take it back further, the 70s Dodgers, Garvey and Say and Bill Russell and Davey Lopes and Reggie Smith out in the outfield and guys like that. They had some really good teams. But Steve Yeager behind the plate. But they could never get by the Yankees in the 70s, in those years, in the 70s. The Yankees, Reggie went yard three times against them in one of those World Series. I mean, they had some very good teams, all-stars up and down the lineup, but they couldn't get by. They couldn't win a World Series with that bunch.
I think that from a Brewers perspective, what can be frustrating if you let yourself think about it is that the Brewers could have been either one of these teams playing in this NLCS based on maybe the regular season. Obviously, they could have beat Washington, and then, well, we would have seen what happened in L.A. I still don't think this Brewers team would have beat L.A. I don't think just because Washington did that would have meant the Brewers did. But if Washington did, and it's probably better to get the Dodgers in five than seven, I mean, it's probably possible.
Well, Washington had better pitching than the Brewers.
Yeah, so I still don't know if the Brewers would have won it, but you had the opportunity. Now, if you would have won the Central, then you would have gone through Atlanta, and who knows how that series would have turned out. I said that there's a decision that David Stearns and the Brewers made, and I've been hard on Stearns. I've been focusing on the trade and the guys that they didn't sign and all that stuff. What about the demotion of Keston Hira? You want to revisit that? Brewers go 8-12 when Keston Hira comes up here. He's dominating. They are desperate to get Travis Shaw going. So at the expense of that, they send Keston Hira back down. They go 8-12 without him. Shaw never gets it going. You saw Haudricourt's piece in the Journal Sentinel where he grades everybody.
Yep.
Gave out an F to Travis Shaw.
Rarely does he give out an F.
He never does that.
Yeah.
So he gets an F to Travis Shaw. And because you tried to get – there's so many different things that happen in a 162-game season. But for some of you, maybe – the reason why you think that the Brewers didn't get it done is because they tried to get Travis Shaw going at the expense of Keston Hira. Obviously, we don't know how much those games would have played out, but I think when we look back at the season, we kind of forget about that. I mean, we were pretty hot here at the station. A lot of you guys were very hot, calling in, upset you didn't get it. And maybe there's one or two of those games that they win. They don't have to worry about this Rocky series. They win the Central. They're going through the Braves, and they're still playing baseball. It's just... this stresses that we always say why every game in April is so important. You never know what the game is going to be that either does it for you or cost it for you. And maybe it was one of those games without Keston trying to get Travis Shaw going that might have cost the Brewers a shot at a little more this year.
You can go back to even like Josh Hader giving up some big home runs during a stretch there. You know, one of the two of those games they hang on to win, maybe it's different. Yeah, but you never forecast that Travis Shaw hit a 157. I think... as badly as Shaw was, the stretch he was going through, I think even the person who was the worst Travis Shaw hater out there thought he can't be any worse than this, but he did get worse than that. So I think that was tough. They gave the veteran Shaw every opportunity to snap out of it. They gave him every opportunity. And finally it was like, this is just going to be a lost season. This was going to be a lost season. And Hira went from being a guy who was probably going to be a toward the bottom of the order guy when they brought him up. They thought, okay. But out of necessity, he was in the four hole in that lineup. He turned out to be an integral part, hit 19 home runs. You know, obviously his defense was a little short, had some shortcomings at defense. But, yeah, I mean, you look at that stretch, how much would Hira made a difference? Who knows? Who knows? But, you know, the bottom line is they stuck with Trav. Now they got a decision to make on Shaw. What are they going to do with him next year? Are they going to offer him? I don't know. What are they going to do? I mean, $4.5 million. He wants it. Of course, Shaw wants a contract extension. That ain't happening right now.
I don't know. I don't know how you give him more time. We wanted Shaw to get sent down to work on his swing, and he did, but the results weren't there. But the Brewers brought him back up because they thought that at least he worked on his swing and he can do it at the major league level. I don't know where it went for Shaw. I mean, one of the reasons I was like skeptical, and I sound stupid now, about the Moustakas signing was because I assumed it would be moving Shaw back to second, and I wanted Shaw just to be at third. I thought the Brewers were jerking Shaw around too much. Let him be consistent defensively. Let him not have to think about a new position. Let him just focus on hitting. Moustakas ends up being great with the 35 home runs, and then Travis Shaw probably should have been sent down sooner than he was, and then he got called back up for Keston Hira. Hira, remember when he got sent down, he had 5 home runs across 20 games-ish.
But you can't give up on a guy who's hit 32 home runs, 30 home runs.
You can't, but you like found the guy to replace him, and you were still like,
but still,
well, no, this is good, but we want the other guy to do
but
it.
But because Shaw had a little track history, so they gave him the benefit of the doubt because he was good for them last few years. Real good. I mean, he big hits, clutch, showed power, you know, batting fourth, fifth, sixth in the lineup. But he just got, and the season just got worse and worse. That is the biggest mystery. There can't be a player in baseball who went from the way they were the season before to being a 157 hitter, the worst position player in baseball. I mean, arguably the worst position, maybe one of the worst position players, maybe one of the worst seasons on an everyday player I've ever seen in Brewer history. Travis Shaw, 157. And he wasn't getting regular playing time at the end, and he didn't deserve it. But how do you go from being a guy who they are marketing, a good player, to being the worst player on the team?
I don't know.
It's a mystery.
And so I can get behind the give him the benefit of the doubt, and we all want him to succeed, but giving him the benefit of the doubt, sure, you have to understand that may have cost them the division.
Well, here's another thing, though. As a general manager, you're not going to push all the right buttons. I mean, this was a button that, you know, maybe they should have, you know, they kept him down there. He got a swing turned around, it looked like, and they brought him back. But, we'll never know how many games, if they would have had Hira in the lineup, had they had won. But as a general manager, you're going to make some good decisions, and you're going to make some bad decisions.
Another game 5 today, Rays Astros in Houston. And then we're on to the championship series before, of course, the World Series gets going. It's Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins, where the Baby Oh Baby breakfast, not just the Baby Oh Baby breakfast, Bart's Baby Oh Baby breakfast, is available for a limited time at Perkins. We've had the big breakfast and then the bigger breakfast, so I naturally thought we'd have the biggest breakfast. And they said, how about the baby breakfast? You just had a baby. We want to celebrate that. I thought, that's very nice of you. But when you say baby, it sounds like it's going to be a small meal. They said, oh, no. This will actually be the biggest one yet. You get 2 eggs done how you like, the smoked sausage, with then 2 more sausage links, 2 bacon strips, your choice of hash browns or breakfast potatoes, and then your choice of 3 pancakes, the mammoth muffin, or toast. You get it all for just $8.59 at Perkins for a limited time. You can get it in the morning, you can get it at lunch, get it at dinner. When you're hungry, you can get it at Perkins, the Bart's Baby Oh Baby breakfast. Ask for it by name, and they'll bring it out to you. It is delicious. We had some the other day when we stopped by Perkins. Don't also forget that on Saturday, kids eat free after 4 o'clock. So a good time to get a big meal, and then the kids can get a free kids meal, and then maybe they can pick off your plate because you'll have so much food. Kids eat free Tuesdays and Saturdays after 4 at Perkins. The latest from Green Bay. We'll get an update from Mike Clemens. It's Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Now, a green and gold update brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. It's all happening at Pottawatomie. Visit paysbig.com. In Green Bay, here's Mike Clemens.
The Packers are back at practice getting ready for Monday Night Football. They'll also practice tomorrow and Saturday. They host the Detroit Lions, who are rested coming off a bye week with a record of 2-1-1 after nearly beating the Chiefs in Kansas City. Lions wide receiver Marvin Jones.
I think we're in a good position. Obviously, you know, we've done some good things, and there's some things that we wish we could have did better, but, you know, it's a new slate. You know, we're going to go out there there and do what we do.
The Packers suffered a lot of injuries against the Cowboys. Corey Linsley left the game early with a concussion, so backup guard Lucas Patrick filled in at center. Patrick says there was a time he wasn't sure he would make the roster this year until he got some advice from Aaron Rodgers.
I didn't feel like I was having the best OTAs or camp. I didn't think it was up to my standards, let alone up to the Packers standard or necessarily Aaron's. Wasn't even remotely there. And he took time out of his day to talk to me and encourage me that it's not just one day that turns you into a bad player, and it's not just one day that turns you into a great player. It's stacking a few days on top, and it's a mentality of approaching it with hard work and determination.
Now, with a win over the Lions on Monday night, Green Bay hopes to secure the lead in the NFC North division. Head coach Matt LaFleur.
The bottom line is whoever wins this next game is going to be the leader in the North. So we know we have a team that's a really good football team coming in our place playing on Monday night.
Best Packers coverage on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart Winkler. That's Chuck Freeman. Ryan Horvat. We got a bit of breaking MLB news, if I may say so. You can't say you have breaking news on the radio without playing that. What do you got there, Horvy?
The Philadelphia Phillies have dismissed Gabe Kapler as their manager. He has been fired after two disappointing seasons.
Boy, I think he, as soon as he got to Philadelphia, He took the brunt of Philadelphia sports fans from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And they never let up. And, of course, Bryce Harper, his team, he leaves Washington. They win a playoff series. He goes to Philadelphia, and they fail miserably.
Yeah, Kapler's record after two seasons in Philly frames, 161 and 163, two games below 500. And as you just said, they spent a little bit of money. But they even knew, I guess they were going for it this year. I wanted to say that was going to be like a 2 to 3 year
rebuild. McCutchen got hurt.
Arrieta got hurt. Arrieta has not been what they had hoped for.
No. 3 years, $75 million for Arrieta. That was a waste.
And then the Bryce Harper thing. See, the thing about Bryce Harper is on Twitter, everybody is taking shots at Bryce Harper. I had to comment on this.
He had a good season.
He had a decent season.
Was an all-star, though.
Like, you can't really rip the guy like, you're sitting at home, because he's sitting at home, yeah, but he's sitting at home with $400 million in his bank account. So, I mean, he wins. We all lose.
But, I mean, he's an athlete. I think you play for getting in postseason baseball and all that. So you don't want to be just going through regular seasons and, you know, winning batting titles, yet your team isn't going anywhere. Hopefully that doesn't happen to Christian Yelich.
Well,
but look at this. I mean, look at the coincidence. Washington was supposed to be nowhere this year. They get off to a horrible start. Now they're a heartbeat away from the World Series.
Breaking news on The Fan, powered by Radio.com Sports, and brought to you by Indeed. Post a job today at Indeed.com/hire.
Yes, and that was Gabe Kapler that got fired, not Kepler with an E, just so everybody knows out there. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about what you just brought up, Frame, since it is the What We Miss segment, which is back, like The Undertaker just stuck its hand out of the ground. It's back, baby. Nobody ruining this segment for me. But so you just brought up Bryce Harper. Jeez. He leaves Washington, and now they're in the NLCS, right?
Yeah.
I brought up a couple weeks back, Albert Pujols leaves the Cardinals. They win 100 games and win the World Series without him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at Christian Yelich.
So you want to get rid of it? Should the Brewers get rid of Yelich?
No. But they did go on a nice run without him. But like, you know, Ryan Braun, I mean, really, like, kind of threw the team on his back. I mean, the pitching, I mean, let's be honest, Craig Counsell was magnificent without Christian Yelich. But I think it just shows how damn good and how important Yelich is to this Brewers team, because last year, the run that they went on where he individually carried them to the finish line, I think that says a lot about Christian Yelich and how he should be regarded as, I think, the top player in all of baseball.
Oh, he is. And I think he should be MVP of the National League.
But we still don't bring up his name like we do here locally. And on a national level, you know, he has picked up a little bit. And if you watch MLB Network, there are commercials with him on there finally. But it's still like when people talk top baseball players, it's still Bryce Harper, you know, Chris Bryant maybe. Javi Baez. I feel like Yelich doesn't get the respect that he deserves.
I don't see why he shouldn't. He deserves all of it, man. And even during that 3-week run the Brewers had to finish off the season, a few days before he got hurt, Saturday night against the Cubs, he doubled off the wall in left field. Schwarber couldn't make the play on it, but the ball was hit like a BB, And then he got hurt a couple of days later. But he kind of helped start that whole run by beating the Cubs on a Saturday night at Miller Park.
Why is baseball so weird, though? Like, how do you lose a guy like Bryce Harper and then you go to the NLCS? Like, was he that terrible in the clubhouse, in the locker room? How do the Cardinals go on that run without Albert Pujols, who at the time we were talking about being maybe one of the greatest baseball players of all time? That's the difference between baseball. Like, the Cleveland Cavaliers, when they lose LeBron James after going to the finals two or three straight years.
Show's over.
Yeah, they won 15 games. They're brutal. So why is it different? You know, if Aaron Rodgers goes out, we've seen what happens with Seneca Wallace at quarterback, Scott Tolzien, Matt Flynn, Brett Hundley, and they're awful. So it's like baseball, though. You could lose a guy, and I think it's just the ultimate team sport.
It's pitching. You know, pitching plays a big part in it. You got to have great pitching, and Washington's got great pitching. And the Dodgers, I thought, they had their ace, one of the best left-handers of our time out on the hill, and he couldn't get it done last night. But in basketball, you take the superstar player. You take Antetokounmpo off the Bucks, and the Bucks aren't making the playoffs.
In the NBA last night,
Giannis
mentioning the Bucks,
not his brother,
133-99. The Bucks beat the Jazz. There is a tweet that we posted from our station account a year and a half ago that for some reason has got brought back up. Did you bring it back up?
Oh no, I did not actually. Gary gave me a nice little pat on the back today, and he said I'm his favorite part of this show. So
interesting.
Gary Ellison?
So I would definitely not bring that up. But somebody found it. You know these people on Twitter, man. Somebody found the Ben Simmons tweet and brought it back up.
April 25th, 2018, between Giannis and Ben Simmons, who you got? Gary Ellison says Simmons. So he said that a year and a half ago. Mm. And the problem sometimes on Twitter is you see a tweet and you don't see the date on it and you think, oh my God, like when I said I would cut or trade Devontae Adams after he was dropping all the balls that were thrown his way, I said, get rid of this guy. Mm-hmm. Second round pick, he's terrible, which is very false now. But sometimes it'll come up and people are like, oh, look at Winkler trolling for clicks.
Yep.
Because I get paid off Twitter clicks, I guess. But sometimes, so what I think people are seeing now this morning is they think that this is something that we're talking about today because Ben Simmons hit a three the other day against a team from where? Australia?
So yeah, his hometown. Or his hometown.
His hometown.
His home.
His home, yeah.
He's Australian.
Okay, the thing about Giannis, I remember the night he was drafted, 2013, I was driving out of the practice facility that day where they held the draft, the Bucks held the draft, and my buddy calls me up and says, I missed it. Who did the Bucks draft tonight? And I said, some kid from Greece. And he goes, oh, that's great. That's great. Some project who's probably going to be out of the league in 2 years. Nobody was really excited. The thing that we were worried about the next day doing the show, and it was Tim Allen and I doing the show, was can we pronounce this guy's name correctly?
Yeah.
So through 4 hours, we had 15,000 different pronunciations of this name. And people in this town still don't got it right.
That's not an awful take, though, because back then, like years back, you would draft these European or Greek players and you would stash them for years, and a lot of them never really did work out. Like, for every Dino Raja and Tony Kukoc, there was a Sasha Danilovich.
Yeah, well, the Bucks were so bad at drafting to begin with, so they had a track history of bad draft. So in 2013, they drafted an 18-year-old kid out of Greece. It's like, okay.
Right, right. I had a bad take. I said Josh Rosen would be the best quarterback taken in that draft, and I think I was really wrong.
Baker, and I'm starting to feel like that might be...
Don't give up on
him. I'm not giving up on Baker.
Bad offensive
line. I'm giving up on Baker. He bails out of the pocket. He only rolls to his right. He looks really bad.
But he's a young quarterback, guys.
I might be giving up on McCarthy. I mean, Kitchens.
Freddie Kitchens. You can't give up on a young quarterback this quickly.
I'm not giving up on him. I thought that I had hopes for him to have like an MVP campaign either this year or next season.
That,
I thought
he was that much?
Good. Well, look at all the weapons they gave him. I mean, Kareem Hunt's going to be there in a couple weeks. Nick Chubb.
But you got to have guys block for you, too.
Yeah, the offensive line is bad. But as bad as that line is, like, look what Aaron Rodgers did with the bad offensive line years back. You know what I'm saying?
Not much.
Guys have done it. Also, you know, I was thinking about this when we give up on quarterbacks early, like Josh Rosen, and we give up on, if you're a Chicago Bears fan, you're beginning to give up on Mitchell Trubisky a little bit. But I thought about it. Remember the Chargers gave up on Drew Brees. He had two really bad years, and I'm not talking about just the shoulder injury. They drafted Phillip Rivers, and they said goodbye to him, and now he's Drew Brees. Now he's a sure thing Hall of Famer. He has a Super Bowl ring, another Super Bowl appearance. But now, like, quarterbacks don't get the time to develop anymore.
Well, I mean, if anybody's going to give up on Trubisky this early, you know, some of these blowhards who are smartest guy in the room thing, first of all, probably never played football. and don't understand the quarterback position.
True.
Number two.
All three of us being former pro quarterbacks.
No, yes. But youth high school football quarterback, I was.
Were you?
Not high school. Youth quarterback.
I won multiple Super Bowls in Madden, back to back.
Yes.
I'm
just saying, you give it up on Trubisky this early? Come on. Give him some, let him get healthy again and give him some more time.
Yeah, we don't really ever get the chance to break news since we're off air at 10 a.m., but I do have a pretty solid story for you guys because Sam Darnold finally got the win over Mono. He's cleared to start for the Jets on Sunday. So Sam Darnold is back. And I know, Bart, you're really high on Sam Darnold. You were high on the Jets. They're awful. Do you think Darnold makes them any better?
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, I know he makes them better, but like, can they win a game this year?
Who do they play this week?
They only lose by two touchdowns now.
They look so...
They may know who they play.
So bad. Yeah, they play the Cowboys.
Oh, no. Cowboys okay.
Cowboys will bounce back.
Oh, that's in New York.
Cowboys, but if the Cowboys have
I like a big Cowboy bounce back.
I'm going to take
the Jets.
Well,
they've lost two in a row. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the line there?
I think it was double digits, but now with Darnold back.
That might be old Freeman... Yeah. Money line play right there.
We'll find out.
Well, I took the Eagles last week.
The other thing that we hope you did not miss this morning, 602 at Chuck Freeman, I am the man tweet.
You got it.
Make sure you go find that and retweet that for my boy Charlie Hustle. We're back tomorrow. We'll talk to Ben Wergel on the 7 o'clock hour, Badgers Michigan State preview. Ryan Wood will join us. Get the latest from Green Bay as they've got practice again today. Off yesterday, they're back at it. Bill Michaels up next. I'll see you at Moe's tonight in Tulsa for the huddle on the Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.